Hey, yo, what's up, weebs? Today's podcast is brought to you by Podgo. Oh, I love these guys at Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast in the How Did You Hear About Podgo section in the application. Do that today. Now, enjoy the show. Let's go, everybody. What's up? Welcome back to Weebcast. Ooh, Weebcast, baby, is back. We back and better than ever. And if you're a Patreon user, you're probably hearing this on a Wednesday afternoon in the middle of the week, chilling, just trying to survive this week. But if you're not, you know, I understand. It's okay. I still love you guys if you don't support on Patreon, or if you do. But if you're not a Patreon supporter of Weebcast, which you can go at patreon.com/Weebcast show, then you're probably hearing this at the usual time on a Friday around at 12 p.m. Eastern, which is fine. I'm just glad to be able to my voice to reach your ears and talk about some good anime and manga goodness, because I got a lot going on in this episode, and I think you guys are going to be super excited, because I'm talking about the one thing that I've joked about for months and months and months on. And yes, it's the infamous, the famous, the illustrious, the godly, the manga and anime that sits atop the throne in the anime and manga scene, that is One Piece. Yes, it's Chris. Me, yes, I will be talking about One Piece on today's episode, but it's going to be a specific topic. It's a topic that people have been talking about for goddamn years, man. And I'm going to be talking about the Will of D. Look at the title. You already knew what you were coming here. I'm talking about the Will of D and what's it all about in the One Piece story. But before I get to that, if you listen to this podcast, wherever you may be listening to this, the number one in anime and manga podcast on the internet, make sure you rate, subscribe, review it, to all that good and juicy stuff on wherever you may be listening to this podcast. And also consider being a Patreon. Actually, you know, don't consider it. Just support the pod. Wait, that's kind of mean, right? Is that mean? Is that okay? Like, can I do that, production team? Uh-oh. I can't. Is that... it ain't that bad, right? Look, all right, consider becoming a Patreon. You get a lot of cool things. You get ad-free episodes. You get episodes early. You get bonus content. You get so much. You get shouted out onto the show. You get shout out your projects, your art, music, anything, podcast, whatever. You get shout out on the show every week in and week out. And so much more stuff. And you get it for cheap. The first tier is only $2 a month. I know. It's crazy. And I offer a lot of benefits. So you're going to freaking love it. Like I said, if you do, you get to hear this show almost 2 days earlier. You can hear this on a Wednesday in the middle of the week. You can hear it before the public even gets it. So it's obviously, why not? Why not support the show? Especially if you like what you've been hearing over these last few months. Why not? But let's get into what I really want to talk about, and that is, what in the hell, this is the Will of D in One Piece. Now I've been wanting to talk about One Piece for a long time. I've made fun of it constantly. I jab at it like I'm a goddamn professional boxer, and One Piece is in the corner just tired of getting the beat the fuck up out of me. Look, as much as I beat up on One Piece about how average and sometimes subpar it has been in over the course of its history, I still like it. Both things can be true. I can still think it's a top 40, top 35 show of all manga and anime of all time and still like it, okay? Just because it's not in my top 5 or top 10 doesn't mean I don't like it. There's a lot of shows I like, and there's very few shows and mangas that I love, and this is just not the one of the ones I love. But there are a lot, there are a few topics and a few details in the ever-expanding work that is One Piece that I do occasionally do a little bit more than just, like, I dare even say, enjoy. A little something I may find some infatuation with, and that is the Will of D. Like I said, you can go on YouTube, go on Twitter, especially YouTube, and you'll probably find a thousands upon thousands of videos talking about the Will of D and what it means, what we know so far, and all that good and juicy stuff. But I feel like I have something more stuff to say. I feel like something more interesting, you know? I feel like we could spice up the conversation a little bit, you know? I'm tired of hearing the same old, and I'm sure they're good people, and I'm tired of hearing the same old. So I wanted to do it myself, because I think I could do better. What do you guys think? But the culmination of One Piece will go down as, you know, surely is one of the most anticipated events in manga and anime industry. It's just going to be. One Piece keeps stacking up arc after arc, which orients towards the overarching theme of the story. Since its start, over two decades ago, One Piece has accumulated some mysteries that revolve around its central theme. The biggest mystery of them all, or one of the biggest mysteries. I think it's one of the more interesting mysteries. I think it is the number one mystery, the more interesting one in the entire series. And that is, and a part of just from what One Piece is of is the Will of D. The significance and nature of the Will of D has not been revealed by Oda yet. All of the facts that associate with the Will of D and the void century in history and just the existence of an ancient city on the moon. It's theorized that the discovery of D's truth will lead to the truth behind One Piece itself, which I think that's no secret to anybody. Throughout the story, Oda provides hints and information regarding the real true nature of the world in One Piece. He discloses the significance of overlooked details and gives life to the mystery that holds the story of One Piece together in a nice little shonen bow. And this podcast episode will cover everything known about and associated with the Will of D. A name that keeps popping up throughout history, creating storm after storm. But the Will of D, associated with the middle initial D, found in names inherited secretly throughout the entire world. Even if the bloodline is extinguished, the name and the will itself does not die out. As acknowledged by several people throughout the story, the name seems to create a storm wherever it goes. The D clan are also known as the enemies of God. And even the former Pirate King inherited the Will of D, and so does our lovable, stretchy protagonist, Monkey D. Luffy. The exact meaning, or the really full form of D, really hasn't been revealed yet. And it will likely be the final, one of the final climaxes in this story. By the time it's about 2025, 2026, if Oda's timing is right. He said in an interview about a month ago saying he's got about 4 or 5 years left of story left on One Piece. So, you know, let's hold him up to that. Let's hope it is. Let's hope there's just 4 or 5 more years left. But let's talk about where it first appeared. Do you know that? The Will of D was actually first mentioned in the Drum Island arc when Dr. Kureha reveals the name of the late Pirate King Gold D. Roger. It kind of introduced the concept that there was something that the world government wished to hide from his populace. And she also claimed Lufin to be a very, very dangerous man. I think she even says when she's seeing him, "So it lives, the will of D." That's my Dr. Kurat Kureha. It's probably, yeah, I haven't heard her voice in a while. I'm not even quite sure what she sounds like. And this information is actually linked back to an SBS question in volume 8 of the manga. And the reader proposed this comment directly to Eiichiro Oda. And I quote, "In Monkey D. Luffy, what does the D stand for? Is it Donburi, which means a bowl? Or maybe Daibutsu, or giant Buddha statue? Or maybe, I'm really curious, please tell me." And Oda, and he's SBS, as he usually does, answers questions from readers and fans around the world. Well, I guess it's just in Japan. I'm not quite sure if he takes people, but whatever. Oda responded, "I've gotten a ridiculous number of these letters, so many, but I cannot answer that question. I can't answer it yet. Please just read it as D and don't think too deeply in it for now." End quote. The Will of D was, I think later, I think the next appearance about the Will of D was later mentioned by Nico Robin, all the way back in the Alabasta arc, when she rescued Luffy from the quicksand. And she's out here and, you know, Luffy and her are now face to face, and she asks Luffy about the meaning of the D in his name and why those with the name fight. But and Luffy was just had no idea. Dumbfounded, or maybe just not interested in it. But later, during the Sabaody Archipelago arc, Robin asked Silver Rayleigh about the significance of the Will of D. And that is when we found out that there is a concrete answer to this question. You know, waiting for them at the end of the journey. And it's like, of course it is. And even in the post-war arc, the five elders, where they all kind of represent maybe famous world leaders, in our real world, you know, like Gorbachev, Gandhi, and all that cool stuff. The five elders actually stated that the D meant danger, which I don't think it actually means danger. They were just meaning, I think they just meant like, hey, anybody with a D in their name, they're bad news. They're just bad news. They're going to cause trouble and more work for us. And look, we're already old. We ain't got time for all that, man. I mean, which they really don't, I guess. I mean, that's why they have the world government under the thumb. So, I mean, kind of all works out, right? But you really can't talk about the world, the Will of D, without mentioning the Void Century. And the Will of D is often associated with this Void Century. But what exactly is the Void Century? Well, let me explain. In all of One Piece's recorded history, a particular time period is deliberately hidden from the people of the world. And this time period was 100 years long and took between 900 and 800 years prior to the current storyline. And that is precisely what the Void Century is, a missing piece of recorded history. And during Nico Robin's flashback, We kind of see that upon the research of the polyglyphs, the scholars of Ohara discovered the presence of an ancient and just illustrious, majestic kingdom. It disappeared from the face of the world 800 years ago, precisely when the world government was formed. Do we have any spooky things? Do we have any spooky sound effects production team, or have anything like that? I like that. That's not bad. We'll work on that. But let's to the polyglyphs, since I mentioned them. I should talk about the polyglyphs, right? The polyglyphs were introduced during the Alabasta arc, and the polyglyphs are mysterious slates with history inscribed on them in the form of ancient lettering. And according to Tamango, there are 30 polyglyphs scattered in the world. And being the pinnacle of Wano's supreme craftsmanship, by Agent Kozuki's Stonemasons. The steels are impervious to any damage, even from explosions. So these are sturdy as block slates of whatever the fuck they're made out of, stone, you know what I mean? But notably, only two characters are known so far that can decipher these cubes. Nico Robin and Charlotte Pudding. And these pontigriffs are the only real last remnants of the Void Century that we know of. And they carry messages written by people of the ancient kingdom, so they wouldn't really be, so they will not be forgotten by time. And there's actually words on the Shandora Ruins one. And I quote, "Keep thy motives in heart with a closed mouth. We are those who will weave history with the ringing of the great belfry," end quote. And interesting about these pontiglyphs is that they're divided in three categories, I believe. We have the historical, instructional, and road. Now, historical reveal pieces of ancient history, obviously, and as well messages written by the ancient people. That's what it is. Pretty self-explanatory. But the more interesting ones, the ones that I'm a little more interested in, are the instructional and road ones. The instructional ones contain instructions and clues about locations of the other historical pontiglyphs. And my favorite ones, the road pontiglyphs. And they contain simply a location. The combined locations detailed by all four road pontiglyphs allow one to locate Raftel. But what does the D stand for? And for all the people childish out there, you know, snickering to himself when I say that and try to clip that, I'm serious. What do you think the D stands for, though, in this case? Like, it's obviously not something as simple as danger or something like that. But unfortunately, we just don't have the answer to this question. Look, I'm not going to go through all the theories and ramblings that the One Piece community have debated about over the two decades of this series being out and published. And to be honest, I don't think there is a theory, really. I haven't seen a real good theory. I mean, there's a lot of good theorists in anime in general, but especially in the One Piece community, there's a lot of good theorists, trust me. And they're incredibly smart people, but I think the answer will be much, much, much simpler than what some of the theories that I've read over the years. And that's what it usually is the case. The answer is much more simpler than we believe. But the inheritance of this said D is also another interesting subject, to be honest. The narration at the end of the Loguetown arc, it said, what did it say? It is, Pershing, pull it up for me, please. Thank you so much, baby. Thank you so much. I love those guys. They deserve a little clap to themselves, right? Give it up. You guys are awesome. Love my production team, man. They do a big thing. They keep me in check. But it said, inherited will, the swelling of the changing times, and the dreams of people. These are the things that cannot be stopped. As long as people seek the power, answer to freedom, these will never cease to be. And there are currently 10 known inheritors of the Will of D. Four of these 10 have been confirmed as deceased, though. Our dead ones. Let's go over the dead ones real quick. Obviously, we have the King of Pirates himself, Gold D. Raja. And then we have his wife, Portix D. Rogue. And then his son, Portix D. Ace, and Jagger D. Sol. And there are live ones. The one's still kicking. And I do think we're going to see one of these die. I think we're going to see one of these Will of D members kick the bucket in these last, and by the end in that last arc. I fully intend so. I guess that's nothing surprising. So that's no hot take there. But we have Monkey D. Garp, Monkey D. Dragon, Monkey D. Luffy, Marshall D. Teach, Trafalgar D. Watcher Law, and Rocks D. Zebek as our living, willing, our D. Inheritors. And the inheritance of the name and how this is passed along has been shrouded in a thick fog of mystery throughout the story. The biggest mystery of D is that most of those who carry the D themselves are unaware of its true meaning. And I think that's one of the more interesting tidbits about this, and I think is not talked about in a lot of these theories. I've only seen it mentioned very, very rarely when I was researching this. I think we fail to realize that it's weird that none of them, or usually that we know of, that they don't know, they either don't care, and they don't, or they either don't know too much of why they inherit the Will of D, or if they even, you know, it's just they have it and they're just kind of living their life, laughing and just trying to do what they, you know, doing the good old jolly pirate life, you know what I mean? But Jagger D. Saul displayed a lack of knowledge on the subject alone when Nico Robin asked him what it meant. Similarly, even when Monkey D. Luffy, with, you know, when she asked Luffy about why those who carry the D fight, he was clueless. Like I said, he was clueless, and he was just not even clueless about it. But he was just clueless on why she was even asking, what she was even talking about. Even Trafalgar Law's parents seemed to have some knowledge on what D meant, considering that although they passed down the initial to their child, they hid it and insisted on using only their surname and given names. But obviously Gold D. Roger is the first and as of yet only known D bearer in the storyline to have discovered its meaning. But I don't know, and that's another thing that people do bring up a lot, is that Goldie Roger must know. Like, he must know what the Will of D is. But what they don't bring up a lot is, I'm sure I'm sure that information had to be passed on. This is the same man who was smiled at his death, openly said that I have treasure hidden somewhere out in the world called One Piece. Go out there and find that bitch. You're gonna think that guy is that confident, that strong, the guy, the king of the goddamn pirates, wasn't gonna, you know, sneak in maybe some hints about the Will of D. I doubt he let that kind of information go to his grave. But some of the common traits of these inheritors are really interesting as well. Firstly, it kind of appears that all the inheritors of the D kind of all share a similar faith in destiny and dreams, which is, I think, is just a, like I said, your typical shonen. We ain't digging that deep. Dream starts with a D. Destiny starts with a D, you know. We're not digging that deep, all right, guys? And just the general consensus that regarding the D's appearance is that they would stir up things on a global scale. This could be wars, change in government, the dawn of a new era. And some of these inheritors of D are just unaware of its meaning. And like I said, as of yet, the first to discover the meaning was the Pirate King himself, Gold D. Roger. Second, all the inheritors of D are able to withstand a higher degree of punishment than others and only succumb to death when they believe it is unavoidable. Kind of like when Luffy almost died in Logtown. Before that infamous lightning struck and stopped that execution there. He was fully, he said, look, he was like, I can't, with the power I have now, I'm about to perish here. So this is the end for me. So I'm going to smile on and let it happen. The third thing, the astonishing evidence of how the D-bearers smile or laugh in the final moments. Witnesses even claimed during Gold D. Rogers' smile during his execution. Ace and Saul were seen smiling as they died and frozen to death respectively. Even Smoker saw Luffy smile in a similar way during a very close near-death experience. And the smile is usually interpreted as acceptance. And these are just some of the instances that support the idea. The only exception to this was Blackbeard or Marshall D. Teach. And the last two are a little more character traits. I think they're not that important. I think they're just added because the typical shonen male kind of thing. But narcolepsy, which is we've seen it in Luffy, his grandfather Garp, his brother Ace. They just seem to sleep at the oddest times, and just even during battles, and you know, they'll sleep anywhere. And the real last one, their appetite, just their massive appetite. D-bearers such as Blackbeard, Luffy, Garp, Ace just consume enormous amounts of food in one sitting. And like I said, those two are just, I don't think they really bear anything deeper meaning other than like, oh, hey, you know, we're different. We're shonen protagonists. You know, we're important people. We're quirky. We sleep and we eat a lot. I don't think it's either real surface level type of stuff. But there was something about the D. And yes, you go ahead and laugh it up. I know it's real funny. Blah, 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 blah. The D. But, the enemies of God thing. When Don Quixote Rosante learned that the law is a D, he revealed to Law that those with the initial in their name are from the fated family of D. In the country of Rosante came from, children were told that if they misbehaved, they would be eaten up by the D. Similarly, elders of that country seemed quite wary of the storm that those with D were known to cause. Rosante explained to Law that the D had been secretly inherited worldwide and throughout history, and that in a certain land, the family of D was referred as the natural enemy of God. And according to Rosante, the D's are considered the natural enemy of the celestial dragons, and which the celestial dragons have been dubbed both in the anime and manga as gods. And there were some signs of some good executed foreshadowing with the Luffy versus Enel fight, kind of setting up Enel as the god of Skypiea. So with the Luffy versus God Enel, I thought was a very good foreshadowing to this thing. Before any of the information of the D clan being the natural enemy of gods was established, Luffy himself, our stretchy hero, fought and defeated Enel because of the fact that, you know, rubber is a natural enemy to electricity. So I do like that kind of little hint and what was to come. And so Oda, I gave you a little props that one. Emu-sama, the highest known authority in One Piece is none other than Emu-sama. Almost everything about this individual is shrouded in a thick fog of mystery as well, yet from the fact that he's the king of the world who rules from the shadows, and that's all that's really clear about him. Luffy will ultimately topple the current world government. I mean, it's no surprise that we know that's going to happen. And it's going to tear down his regime and complete the circle of a D clan member defeating another, you know, quote unquote, god. Now, some unexplained information. Since the Will of D's specific nature has not been revealed quite yet, all we can really do is just theorize what it can be. But before we do that, there are some unexplained plot points that we really need a refresher on, namely Joy Boy. Joy Boy was first mentioned during the Fishman Island arc, I believe. And upon deciphering a Poneglyph hidden in the Fishman Island forest, Nico Robin found out that Poneglyph had an apology written by Joy Boy. In writing, Joy Boy apologized to the former Poseidon for being unable to fulfill a promise. And while not much is really known about this character, it is obvious that he was someone important enough to have an entire polyglyph to their name. And it's often theorized that Joy Boy was a member of the D clan. Next, the giant straw hat. During the introduction of Yuma-sama, we were shown a giant straw hat that was locked inside of the holy land of Marijua. And nothing else has been revealed since about this giant-ass straw hat, but it's often theorized that the hat belonged to Joy Boy himself. The name of the ancient kingdom. You know, during Nico Robin's flashbacks, Clover explained O'Hara's findings at gunpoint to the officials of the Cypher Pole. But right before he was shot down, he was about to take the ancient kingdom's name lost in the Void Century. It just seems very suspicious. And it's really often theorized that the name had to do something with the Will of D. And that the country's name most likely is tied to a name. Like I said, I think the Will of D is literally just stands for a name. And nothing really deeper than that. And I think people with that name were stigmatized by the what would be grow up or which would come to be the Celestial Dragon. So basically they could have been a family of traitors, rebels that were maybe good with the nobles at the time all the way back then. Did something, noticed that they all have D in their name. That means they gotta be the devil. So, you know what I mean? But next. Inel's Great Space Operation. Like, what the hell are we doing? But the 10th cover story series, chapters 474 in One Piece manga, shows us Inel's adventures on the goddamn moon. After Inel sets sail for the endless Vrav, the moon, he encounters a small group of small robots known as Automata, as well as vicious group of space pirates. And after a series of events, Inel's Goro Goro no Mi powers wound up activating not only all of the Automata, but their city as well. And the self-proclaimed god discovers his true roots. During the cover story, we kind of see an ancient city on the moon, and which seems to be where Skypeans really originated from, which, you know, just not on the sky, but all the way up in the sky known as space. And if this city isn't as ancient, as advanced as it seems, it's definitely going to play a larger role when we discover more about the ancient kingdom. Capone Beggy's disappearance. This is something odd that is overlooked when people watch or read One Piece, but in chapter 594 of the manga and episode 511 of the anime, Capone Beggy's ship is pulled into the sky by a gigantic black object. And after this incident, he was seen in Big Mom's pirate crew. There's been no mention of this incident since then, and it's really just unclear if this is just a plot point Oda abandoned, maybe had a plan for it and just really never got around to it, wanted to keep the story moving, or is it something that holds a little more deep meaning? It might be related to some of the other mysteries that we've stated. But yeah, now you're caught up all about on the Will of D. And some of my thoughts, some of my interesting thoughts on about it and all that good stuff. Look, One Piece is great. It's good. It's pretty good. Make sure you guys watch it. I mean, it won't be a waste of your time. Definitely won't be seeing, for those of my Patreon viewers, which one of my bonus content shows is it worth watching? You'll never see One Piece on that because it is worth watching. It's worth reading. You'll get some good laughs. You'll definitely enjoy yourselves. But that's pretty much it. I really hope you enjoyed this part, because I would say right after we're gonna get into some ads, and right on the other half we're gonna get into one of my favorite things to do is read manga. But and also as much as I just like reading manga, I love reviewing the hell out of manga. So right on the other half we're gonna be getting to the weekly manga review, baby. I cannot fucking wait. Oh my god, production team, are you ready for this? Are you ready for some weekly manga review? I bet you can't fucking wait, right, bro? All right, man, right, come on, hit me up with some good shit. I like it. Thank you very much. I like that. Oh, you're too kind. You guys are too kind. All right, stop it. Cut it. Thank you. But like I said, that is coming up and much more on the other half. Hey, it's Weebcast Radio. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Weebcast. Hope you guys have been enjoying the show, because, like I said, we've talked a lot already, and we're going to get into a lot more, into some more interesting topics, because, look, it's the Weekly Mountain Corner. It's back, baby. Back. But I hope you enjoyed my One Piece discussion, and just about the Willy V. Hope you guys catch up, because it hasn't played too much recently in the current One Piece landscape right now, so I really just wanted to compile things that I liked about the Willy D and kind of present it back to you guys in a nice concise fashion. But right now we're back, and I want to do some manga reviews on the Weekly Mountain Corner, my favorite segment to do in all of recording this podcast. This is my favorite thing to do. Look, I'm a manga head. I eat manga all the goddamn time, and I love reviewing it and sharing it with my listeners out there, and just my friends and all that good stuff. Look, it's the ending of a week. Well, unless when you're a Patreon, if you're a Patreon supporter, you'll be hearing this in the middle of the week, right on 2 days early, more than the public even gets to it. So, and ad free. So, but look, it's the ending of the week, which can only mean one thing. It's time for the Weekly Manga Corner for the Weekly Shonen Jump magazine. Shueisha's legendary manga magazine has been releasing every week for over 50 years at this point, and it's still has enough exciting series in its roster to justify its hallowed status. Plus, with Viz Media now publishing the entire thing in English, there's never been a better time to jump right in. See what I did? In this episode of Weebcast, what we're about to do here, I'm going to have Moi, aka C-Dub, Chris, the independent variable, Mori, the mailman, to investigate the latest and greatest in the world of Weekly Shonen Jump, telling you what's worth your time and what's not. And this week, we are chatting Chainsaw Man Chapter 85, Maku-chan God of Destruction Chapter 12, and Mission Yozakura Family Chapter 51. Ah, man, it's been so great. It's been so great. But I'm just going to start off strong with one of my favorite mangas out currently running right now, Chainsaw Man. But I want to start off Weekly Manga Corner this week off by saying that, as a rule, I try to leave at least a couple of some time before featuring a series again in this lead spot of the Weekly Manga Corner. Ideally, is what I like Advisor to do is just to, like, you know, scroll down the many episodes, pop on an episode, check on the second half of the episode and see what I'm talking about in the Weekly Manga Corner, and so just see a variety of series and chapters that I've talked about, and all that good stuff. Because what is really intending to capture just both the variety that exists in the Weekly Shonen Jump and maybe kind of prevent one series dominating the proceedings. But once again, and for like the third or fourth week in a row, maybe whatever the case may be, Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 is going to force me to break this goddamn rule. I just can't talk about it. Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 is incredible. It is the perfect encapsulation of why I love Tatsuki Fujimoto's writing so goddamn much. Madcap, unhinged, and endlessly creative. It also comes in a string of incredible chapters. While Chainsaw Man hasn't been a leader for a while, it has been featured as a part of a lineup for editions practically every 2 weeks since then. So, you know, what makes Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 so special? Well, believe it or not, it has nothing to do with the surprising plot developments or character deaths, which, you know, I will discuss later, but everything to do with an interview that Yuji Kaku, author of Hell's Paradise, Jiko Kuraku, did over last weekend. In it, Kaku described that Tatsuki Fujimoto's writing style as one where the gag element of a character is the driving force of the story. More generally, one could say that Fujimoto is the very concept-oriented writer, and he has very clear profiles for his characters and simple ideas for his stories, which can at first glance appear quite kind of juvenile, right? But Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 is one such story. And this week, Fujimoto asked the question, what if Chainsaw Man went to eat a hamburger? And further, he asked, and what if Konbenny was there? The end result is both beautiful and both parts terrifying, perfectly showcasing the appeal of the series. I'm not a comedian, but I got a joke for you. A broke young man, a chainsaw dog demon, and a hopeless klutz walk into a burger joint. What happens?
as Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 correctly points out, all of the employees would be absolutely terrified of the dog demon, and while the young man just wants to chow down on a burger, and the klutz, bless her soul, bless her heart, can't help but let her knees give in to the pressure. Fujimoto's combination of the macabre and the mirthful is just as effective here as it's been in the past, forcing laughs out of the reader, but also causing them to fear for her own character's lives. You know, there's true horror in the way Chainsaw Man waits patiently for his burger while the employees do their best to follow the preordained ritual, only to have Konbini mess it up and someone die. It's like being stuck on the worst type of neurotic fairground ride ever, being whirled around on the waltzers while seeing the corpses of fellow passengers go splat in the comedic funhouse mirrors. good times. The way that Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 takes the very simple concept of the titular character walking into a burger joint and elevates it into something incredible brings forth the comparison of the Let's Go Eat Some Italian Food from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And this is not simply because of their fast food based theme per se, but because both stories are simple enough to be understood from their titles, yet go so much further beyond of what their audience might expect from these situations. Of course, the only difference is that Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 is much, much, much darker. Helping Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 along is also the character of Konbini. She has long since been a favorite of the fanbase, but her inclusion in this latest chapter perfectly cements her as the tortured pariah of the series, never dying, never killed, but constantly suffering as a result of her own flaws. And is that not a fate worse than death? Speaking of death, there's also a couple narrative developments in Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 that we should probably talk about. I am, of course, speaking about Makima's quote-unquote death right at the beginning of the chapter. Chainsaw Man crashes into where she was standing with Kishibe and cuts her head to toe. Surprising stuff we got here. But thanks to the exposition delivered from last week's chapter, we know how impactful this death in Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 could be. Any devil that Chainsaw Man kills is erased from existence. As a result, it would seem Makima's gone forever. Nevertheless, I sincerely doubt that this will turn out to be the case, though, because if Makima dies, not only will the series lose one of the most iconic characters, and I think one of the best villain they have in the goddamn Shonen Jump magazine, but also much of its narrative momentum. The whole story up with its point and has been part of the Control Devil's machinations. I wouldn't be surprised if this was all part of her plan, even if it contradicts what she told Kishibe last week. In any case, Chainsaw Man Chapter 85 will probably go down as one of my favorite chapters in this entire series so far. With Chapter 82 was already up there thanks to Makima's laugh scene, but Chapter 71, Chapter 64 were also all good strong contenders. But it does have that combination of hysterical and the horrific. However, that just inches it out just ahead for me. With Magu-chan, God of Destruction, Chapter 12. But now we have some time for something completely different. You won't find any surprising character deaths or stomach-churning horror in Magu-chan, Chapter 12. But what you will find is a whole load of wholesome humor and a change in narrative that proves very exciting for this series' future prospects, because summer is coming to a close, and in the real world, as it has already ended in Magu-chan, last week's chapter 11 saw protagonist Ruru return to school from summer vacation, introducing Magu to her friends and making some new additions to the Destruction Disciples along the way. But this week, however, it becomes pretty clear why author Kamikike has chosen to shift the series' setting. Instead of an endless summer, it now becomes possible to transfer Magu-chan into a school series. Because as it turns out, Ruru's friend Kikyo is actually really into the occult. Sounds like my kind of girl, but like really into the occult. She's been operating the occult research club on her own for the past year now. Left behind her graduating upperclassmen, what Magu-chan Chapter 12 consists of then is the classic save the club by getting together necessary amount of members storyline. Don't you love classic anime plots? Yeah, this is exciting for many reasons, but firstly, it offers hope for narrative structure to what has essentially been just an aimless series up until now. I mean, not that it's been really a problem so far, but it may prove difficult to maintain in the long run. But furthermore, it could widen kind of the scope of the story from simply being the misadventures of Magu Makaneku and into something more closely related to the occult, the arcane, and the prospect of meeting other elder gods, you know, along the lines of Napu is tantalizing, you know. Of course, the idea for such a story only works if you have the quality of characters to maintain it. And in this regard, Magu-chan Chapter 12 seems quite promising. You know, Kikyo herself is pretty entertaining herself and a nice addition to the cast. You know, being obsessed with Magu-chan's unusual body and enthusiastically accepting initiation into the Destruction Disciple's blood oath. Ruru is quite unremarkable, but it is her relationship with Ren that has me really excited. If being together in the same club can lead to more adorable, awkward interactions between the two, then look, I'm all here for it. And to top it all off, Magu-chan Chapter 12 is funny. Like, really, really funny. Much like its previous chapters in the series, it had me laughing out loud at multiple points, and especially at the end, when Magu-chan in this chapter kind of attempts to pass himself off as a human student, and the teacher's reaction was actually pretty funny. So yeah, Magu-chan's Chapter 12 is good. But what makes it even better is the fact that it opens up so many more possibilities for the series moving forward. And for those, and maybe you've been like me, who've been already enjoying the series up until this point, but may it mark a new frontier in my appreciation. We'll have to just kind of see what next week's chapter gets up to, but consider me firmly on board. Our last chapter in the weekly manga corner on Weebcast, the number one anime manga show, is Mission Yosakura Family Chapter 51. Finally, we come to Mission Yosakura Family Chapter 1. And speaking of engaged, I've been thoroughly disengaged with Hitsui Gonadada's spy series as of late. Last week's chapter was pretty good, but you know, but the recent climatic arc had me bored out of my goddamn mind. Call it an aversion to hyper-masculinity, but I just didn't find the family's outrageously muscly opponents very entertaining in this case. But at least this chapter is good, though. But you remember Animal Crossing, right? It seems like everyone's forgotten about Nintendo's latest title now that the hype has kind of died down since. But Mission Yorozuka's family really hasn't. Because in Chapter 51 opens up with Tayo and Shion playing one of the hackers geniuses custom-made hacking games, parodies of popular titles that actually carry out real-life missions called Beast Crossing. No prizes for guessing what that reference is, though. We already saw one of the games back in Chapter 11, and it's as entertaining as it is here it was back then. Even so, what makes Mission Yorozuka Family even more entertaining is the fact that we finally get to spend some time with the titular family in this chapter. The criticism has been raised multiple times at this point, but the most annoying thing about Hitsui Godada's writing is that he prefers to introduce new characters instead of developing old ones. Whether or not this is being mandated by the editors is besides the point, as it gives the series that impression that being as wide as an ocean, but about as deep as a puddle. And much like Chapter 50, Mission Yosakura Family Chapter 51 remedies this by letting us spend time with Shion. We also see a bit into her personal life as well, including her thinly veiled affection for Kenzi, which does wonders in terms of fleshing out her character. But certainly, this week's chapter is nothing compared to the pure fluff that was last week, but it still marked an improvement on the previous arc. But part of the reason why I chose to focus on Mission Yorozuka Family Chapter 51 this week is because it is dealing with the consequences of the previous arc. And I love when stories do this. Gundara is not shying away from the fact that Tayo has now Yosakura superpowers, nor is he afraid to let him use them to overwhelm his opponents. But my only hope is that he also learns the lesson of previous chapters, crafting some better antagonists while also focusing on what makes the series so compelling: family. Much like the Fast and Furious, that's all it's about right here. But you can read Chainsaw Man Chapter 85, Magu-chan God of Destruction Chapter 12, and Mission Yosakura Family Chapter 51 for free on Viz Media's Shonen Jump app. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of Weebcast, the number one anime manga show on the internet. This has been, we don't have 32 episodes, which is absolutely crazy. I'm just looking at it right now. 32 goddamn episodes, and we kind of got into a good rhythm now, a really decent rhythm with doing with original topic ideas, starting off the show strong, and then ending it with something chill, something laid back with our weekly manga corner. So I'm liking the structure right now, and also integrating with Patreon with extra content and bonus episodes each and every week. I cannot wait, and I got some help. I got some friends in high places that have been helping me out, kind of organize everything. So I'm really excited about that moving forward. This show is growing, and it's all thanks to you guys. So please keep listening, keep sharing, support the show on Patreon if you can at patreon.com/weebcastshow. Please, 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 that'd be very much appreciated. I'm able to improve the quality of the show, get better guests, do better things, travel, all that cool stuff. You guys can make it happen. I know you guys are the best listeners, some of the best fan base anywhere in the any Twitter, any TikTok, any Tumblr, doesn't matter. You guys are the best. I don't care where you guys come from. I love every single one of you guys. Keep being cool and keep supporting the podcast, like I said. This has been Weebcast. Next week, I got some cool stuff for you. Because next week, I have what I hope to be my Tokyo Ghoul retrospective episode. Super excited for it, but I'm talking about all about Tokyo Ghoul, like I did in my Bleach retrospective, and kind of give it an official Weebcast rating and how I think it fits in the history of anime and manga. So that's going to be great. If that's not next week, it might be the week after. We'll see. Stay tuned. Follow my Twitter at BaitSenpai. Follow the Instagram at WeebcastTV. Support the show on patreon.com/WeebcastShow. Just keep doing what you guys are doing, and I love every single one of you guys. Thank you for allowing my voice into your ears and into your homes. This has been your boy C-Dub, a.k.a. Mori, a.k.a. The Independent Variable, a.k.a. C-Dub, a.k.a. the man with the blue thermos water bottle. And I'm out of 2000. See ya.